This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer. It's all about living your best life.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Great to have you with us for the Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer podcast. This is your chance to catch up on something you might have missed, listen again to an amazing expert, and of course, pass it forward to someone you think might enjoy our content. In conversation with Dr. Dima Salem, specialist in obstetrics and gynecology at Genesis Clinic, as we talk about being pregnant during the pandemic, the big questions from trying to conceive to even giving birth when you have COVID, plus your questions as well. You are sending in those on 4001 and on the Air and Play app. Don't forget, we connect you with some of Dubai's most in-demand doctors every single week. On Sundays, we talk children, parenting, education and more. And Dr. Dima was on hand addressing pregnancy during these COVID times.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Dr. Dima, first of all, happy Mother's Day.
Yay, happy Mother's Day to you too. It's wonderful to be on the show. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Can I ask you, how many kids do you have?
I have four. Four beautiful children.
Oh, wow. What's the age range?
I've got a 13-year-old, an 11-year-old who's turning 12 soon, and I have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Wow, full range. And we are marking a year of distance learning today. and it's great to hear you sounding so upbeat after what's been a really challenging year for parents in all sorts of different ways. And I know you've obviously been working throughout, and I find it's so interesting that, you know, we think about health over the last year and we immediately go to COVID, but it kind of boggles my mind a little bit that we've still had, you know, non-COVID related conditions and births and sprained ankles, and, you know, life goes on, which I'm sure you've been very much at the forefront of. And being pregnant during COVID, doctor, must be so different. Can I ask what you've observed with your patients during this time, both physically and emotionally?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, despite the fact that there was a pandemic going on worldwide, women's health, pregnancies, childbirths, trying to conceive kept going on. So that did not stop that at all. And it's been a very difficult time during the pandemic, you know, because in pregnancy, you know, especially if it's your first pregnancy, there's a lot of unknowns, a lot of uncertainties. Do I eat this? Do I do that? Should I not be doing this? And on top of that, having a pandemic that we as professionals don't have that much information about, you know, adds on to the uncertainties for these patients. So it's been definitely a very anxiety-provoking time for these pregnant patients. But on top of that, you have to also, you know, look into the fact that when you're pregnant, you really rely on the support system that you have, whether it's by having a mother, you know, your mother coming and attending your delivery to help you afterwards, you know, with taking care of the baby, or if you have other children, you need a nanny to stay at home with those children while you go to the hospital to deliver, or if you're going to the operating room for a cesarean section, you want your husband to be holding your hand throughout the whole time. Well, let me tell you something, Helen, throughout the whole pandemic, the COVID pandemic, we have needed to not only be the physician for our patient to do the deliveries, but we've needed to fill in those, you know, slots for support, you know, being the mother afterwards to help with childcare, being that husband to hold that patient's hand, giving the support for these patients, because the pandemic definitely limited the family support and the different types of support that you can get with these patients. So definitely I'd say number one is the loneliness factor. Feeling that you are all by yourself, you know, was a big challenge for us for sure.
And that's why I'm so glad that things are now kind of somewhat back to normal after giving birth. You know, I was talking about, you know, baby classes now. And yes, things are socially distanced, but at least there are those social opportunities, which as new parents, you really do come to rely on, because you need to find your people that you can WhatsApp at 3 o'clock in the morning being like, you know,
absolutely,
is anyone else awake? You know, because I'm feeling quite lonely in the middle of the night.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's been very challenging for these patients. You know, like I said, in terms of the unknown factors of COVID and what's going to happen to you and to the baby, but as well as, you know, being all by themselves. And so we've needed to step it up a notch for the OBGYNs out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, huge credit to all of you, as you say, not just managing the practical side, but often, you know, being a bit it's of an so emotional and cheerleader yeah. in so many yeah. ways. And thinking mm-hmm. back to my own pregnancies, I used to get what we kind of termed as scanxiety. So every time I'd go mm-hmm. in for a scan, and we are so lucky here in the UAE that if you are, like I was, quite an anxious pregnant woman, to have those scans to go along and get the reassurances. Yeah. But I can only imagine now, you know, going in for scans during a time where you might not feel safe. And we know how amazing the hospitals yeah. here and clinics are at keeping things yeah. socially distanced and sanitized, of course. But have you found that some mums-to-be have been reluctant to perhaps come in for even checkups during pregnancy yeah. because of COVID?
Yeah, so we've had kind of a mix of both, I would say. I've had patients who just really are itching to get into the clinic to make sure that everything is okay and to get those scans done and to hear that heartbeat that's like music to their ears. Mm-hmm. But then we've also had patients who are reluctant to leave the house, reluctant to step into a medical facility, reluctant to expose themselves. And luckily here at Genesis, I mean, we've really, really stepped it up in terms of making our patients feel like they're safe, in terms of limiting the number of patients in the waiting rooms and making sure that we're screening our patients. So that helps. But also when you have patients who are COVID positive and pregnant, it's difficult for them, obviously, because they can't just walk into a clinic to check on that baby's heartbeat. And I think those are the women that really need the support. And thankfully, living here in the UAE, we have facilities and a support system that the government has set up where you have COVID patients. If they need to go to a hospital, they go to government hospitals or hospitals that are accepting COVID patients. And they are providing transportation from the RTA to allow these patients to get into a car safely, being COVID positive, and to go to the hospital. So I would say that we've had patients that have been anxious and not wanting to leave the house to get checked up. But at the same time, we've had patients who have really been wanting to get checked out, especially if they're COVID positive.
What happens if someone who is pregnant starts to have symptoms?
All right. Well, here's the good news is that even though pregnancy is considered to be a high risk for getting the severe COVID complications, the good news is that the majority of pregnant patients are not going to end up getting those complications such as, you know, hospitalization, ICU admission, intubation, and so forth. So we would say about 90% of pregnant women who test positive, if they are not having the severe symptoms, we just have them stay at home. Obviously, it's nerve-wracking for them, and we try to offer them support through calling them and messaging them to make sure they're doing okay. But we just tell them to stay at home, check their temperatures, make sure that they are well hydrated, and giving themselves the good physical and mental support at home.
And then what happens if you go into labor while you are still COVID yeah. positive? What happens then when you are, you know, needing to go to hospital?
You go to the hospital. So nowadays, all the hospitals are able to, or the majority of them, I should say, are able to receive the COVID positive patients. However, for example, where we deliver at City Hospital, we have designated COVID positive rooms that are pressurized rooms that are away from the rest of the non-COVID laboring patients. And we cover it up, you know, from head to toe with complete, you know, protective gear. And we go ahead and do what we need to do. I mean, obviously, COVID is not going to stop the childbirth, and childbirth is going to happen no matter what. So we obviously, you know, have to take the precautions necessary for these COVID positive patients. But if, you know, they are in labor, we go ahead and deliver them. If they require a cesarean section, we do that, you know, using and doing the necessary precautions.
Doctor, what do we know about COVID being passed to the baby from a positive mum?
Yeah, so we have had some case studies showing that maybe there is some transfer of the virus to the baby. However, we have not seen strong evidence to tell us that for sure the COVID, the virus itself goes to the baby and harms the baby. So there are some case reports, you know, possibly implying that there is some transfer. But even with those babies that, you know, imply that there was a transfer, we have not seen any major harm or drastic, you know, consequences on the baby. So in general, our biggest concern with a pregnant mom who tests positive is the mom herself. Because like we said, you know, 10% of COVID positive patients who are pregnant can end up with severe complications of COVID. So our highest priority at this point is going to be the mom.
I'm going to go to the text line now, Dr. Dima. M has been in touch saying, how long should it take me to get pregnant after stopping birth control? It's been 7 months and I'm wondering where she goes to the doctors. She's 34 years old. Thank you. What kind of guidelines do you offer when someone is trying to conceive? I don't know if age is relevant here, but stopping birth control 7 months ago.
Absolutely. So age is definitely very relevant. So typically our recommendation is for a patient who is less than the age of 35, so she qualifies to be in this category, to wait for 12 full months of trying to conceive. And if she hits the 12-month mark, then to go ahead and get evaluated. Now, this is, you know, with the assumption that she has no medical issues that can prevent her from getting pregnant. And this is assuming that her periods, her cycles are regular every month. Now, if she had just gotten off the birth control pills 7 months ago, that birth control pill no longer is affecting her cycles, we can see a delay of ovulation up to 90 days of stopping the birth control pills. So she's well beyond that. And my recommendation to Anne is to just continue for 12 months. Now, if she were over the age of 35, we don't have our patients wait for 12 months. We actually have them just go up until 6 months of trying, and then after 6 months to come back to come into the clinic to get evaluated, only because the clock is ticking at that point, and we don't want to delay their fertility and decrease their chances of getting pregnant in the future. So rule of thumb, 12 months for somebody less than 35, 6 months for somebody over 35 and over.
Thank you for that. I feel like for so many friends of mine in the UK who might be dating or have been trying to conceive and needing to go through IVF, the pandemic has been just the most frustrating obstacle. So challenging about, you know, wanting to meet someone, you know, and my friends are in their kind of mid to late 30s and not being able to date. And then, you know, friends of mine who are in couples in other parts of the world where they need to have some kind of assisted, help when it comes to conceiving, and, you know, treatments just not being available. My heart absolutely goes out to people who are trying to navigate a really difficult time under even more challenging circumstances. Which brings me to Shara, who, I'm so sorry to hear this message, saying, I've had two miscarriages in the last 2 years. I'm only 29, so people are saying I shouldn't worry. My last checkup was fine, no cysts or anything like that that would hinder us from having another baby. Are there any issues that we need to rule out? If someone comes to you with that kind of history of sadly losing babies, you know, two miscarriages in the last 2 years, what kind of checks can you do to establish if there is anything that's stopping that pregnancy going full term?
Well, first of all, I'm so sorry to hear that, Shira. I hope that you are doing okay today. Second of all, you know, one of the things that we have to make sure is when somebody goes through recurrent miscarriages, and the definition of recurrent miscarriages does change from one medical organization to another, but typically recurrent miscarriages is either two or three or more miscarriages back to back. But in general, we have to do a full evaluation. Now, this means the patient going into the clinic, getting a full history from her. So that involves her past medical history, what medications she's on, obstetrical history in the past, meaning what kind of miscarriages did she have? Were they early in the first trimester? Were they past the first trimester? Any allergies, any surgeries that she's had? And then we go through, you know, any potential thing from her history that can put up some red flags. After that, we have to do a full examination to make sure that there is nothing physically that's going on that can prevent a pregnancy to continue. So that includes doing, for example, an ultrasound. That may also include doing specific blood work to make sure that she doesn't have any underlying medical condition that can, you know, predispose her to having miscarriages. And the evaluation is a pretty long, expensive evaluation, and it's all going to depend on her history. So typically, you go in, give your history, get the physical examination done, get the ultrasound, get blood work, and hopefully, if there is an issue that is, you know, found, and that can be treated. Otherwise, if everything is normal, then we do encourage her to continue trying again. And if that doesn't work, or if she continues to have recurrent miscarriages, then she needs to repeat the evaluation or proceed with assistive reproductive techniques.
Dr. Dima, thank you so much for your insights this afternoon. I feel like, you know, you're very good at that kind of, I don't want to say no nonsense because that sounds harsh, but simplified. You know, it's easy to get my head around it because doctors, you know, there's a lot of jargon sometimes. So I really appreciate your speaking on a level today, especially around sensitive topics. So thank you. Fatima's been in touch saying, found out last week that I'm expecting my first child, congratulations, due in November. She says, I suffer with long-term hives and they drive me mad. The only thing that helps is taking meds similar to Benadryl in the UK. Google says this is okay during pregnancy. pregnancy, but I'm really worried about putting anything in my body that could cause issues with the pregnancy. Any advice? Thank you. What would you say to Fatima, apart from congratulations?
First of all, congratulations for sure. But yes, hives, you know, in pregnancy, if that's what you suffer from, then you definitely do want to be on something like an antihistamine. So Benadryl, yeah, you can take something like that. However, we prefer actually that you stick to something like Zyrtec or Claritin. Those tend to be safe in pregnancy and don't necessarily have as much of the side effects. So, and that's readily available here in the UAE. So Zyrtec or Claritin would be the ones that we would recommend.
There you go. Celine, I really, really empathize with you because, Celine, I had the exact same thing. Celine's saying, my doc keeps saying I have a big baby and if I want to give birth naturally, I need to make sure she doesn't grow too big. Can I even help that? I'm not overweight and I have a healthy diet. Thank you. Throughout my second pregnancy, for the last few months, my doctor's like, big baby, very big baby. And I would lie there going, there's nothing I can do about that.
No.
This is not very helpful, apart from causing me massive anxiety about my massive baby. And she actually wasn't.
Yeah.
She had 3.6 kilos. So I would say maybe take some measurements with a pinch of salt. First of all, what else would you say to Celine?
You know, she nailed it. I mean, if she is not overweight and she's controlling her weight gain during pregnancy well, and she's eating healthy and she's eating everything that she should be and staying away from the things that she shouldn't be, and she's tested for gestational diabetes and she's not gestational diabetic, then there's nothing that she can do. You know, genetics definitely plays a role and you really have no control over the genetics. So I would say mental support and try to go through your pregnancy, not worrying too much about it. And obviously, if the physician is worried about it, you know, they're going to recommend necessary protocols and procedures to be done. So if you're doing all the right things, don't worry about it.
I remember, especially during that time, just looking at my husband being, I like the fact you're 6'3". I like your broad shoulders, but your head is massive. Why did I marry you? Why didn't I go for a jockey?
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
No name on this message, but saying, I just want to say to all the pregnant ladies out there who are finding it tough with COVID restrictions and additional worries, stay strong. Everything will be okay in the end. For a mum who's been through one COVID pregnancy and is in the middle of another, thank you so much for that. It really does mean a lot. Faye's been in touch, Dr. Deemer on 4001, saying, I have stopped sleeping since I hit my third trimester. Help. Is there a gentle remedy for insomnia during pregnancy? It's taking every bone in my body, Faye, to not say it, but I'm going to say it. This is the training camp for when your baby arrives. This is the sleep deprivation practice. I'm so sorry, though, because it's so hard. Anything you suggest, Dr. Deemer?
It is difficult, Helen. I mean, we've got multiple factors that really ruins your sleep in the third trimester. And hey, I agree. It's kind of mother's nature's way of trying to get you ready for what life is going to be like after you deliver. But definitely from, you know, not finding the comfortable position at night, tossing and turning from one side to another because each side of your hip hurts, laying on it for a while, getting up and going to the bathroom, and just plain insomnia. There's lots of things that you can try to do. Unfortunately, we don't recommend actually taking medications. So, you know, sleeping medications, we try to kind of avoid and put that on the side. But the things that you can do are the things that we typically recommend to women to do for trying to go to sleep when they're even not pregnant. So trying to decrease the temperature in your bedroom to less than 20 degrees, exercising during the day, trying to avoid, you know, mobile devices and electronics at least 1 hour prior to going to sleep, propping yourself up with pillows in between your legs, trying to not drink any fluids at least 1 hour prior to going to bed so you don't have to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. All those things you can try. Also, some thought into trying to take some magnesium supplements. Talk to your doctor first before you do that. But those are really the natural kind of easy things that we recommend patients to do. And if that doesn't help, actually, sometimes we send patients to go and see a therapist, because there are moms out there that really suffer from severe insomnia, and going to see a therapist may help.
I think that we need that point that we made earlier about anxiety in pregnancy, especially right now, is really not to be underestimated. So I think that's a really, really good idea. Thank you, doctor. No name on this message, saying I'm 7 months pregnant and every time my doctor, I visit my doctor, I like her a little bit less. She sometimes shakes my tummy to get my baby to move, says he's lazy. Is it too late to change doctors? I don't want her to deliver my baby now. How late can you leave it before you switch doctors for that delivery?
You know, there isn't a rule of thumb in terms of how late. Every doctor is going to have her preference. There are some physicians that do not like to accept patients that are far in their pregnancy and close to their due date. I would say if she's about 28 weeks or so, it is reasonable to actually go and find another doctor. And to be honest with you, whoever this caller is, if you do not feel comfortable with the doctor that you are seeing now, you should not have her deliver your baby. Not because of anything, you know, I'm sure she's a wonderful physician, but when you go into labor and you birth your child, and God forbid something goes wrong, the last thing that you need is to have a person there that you do not trust, that you do not feel comfortable with. So I would recommend that you find somebody that you feel comfortable with to prepare you for the childbirth, because you definitely will need that as a support.
Couldn't agree more. You are at your most vulnerable during that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to have someone in the room that you don't feel comfortable with is, no, I can't imagine anything worse, to be honest. So yes, anonymous messenger. It does come down to personality. Of course, it comes down to expertise, but you need to be able to trust the person in the white coat, but also the person that they are as well. So good luck with everything. And last question from Alia, saying, do you recommend an elective C-section during COVID? I am considering, and so far there seem to be more pros than cons given the situation. I am due in 3 months. Thank you. What kind of pros and cons would you give specific to COVID around an elective C-section, Dr. Dima?
So in terms of COVID and the method of delivery, actually the method of delivery is not going to change, and it's still going to be dependent on the obstetrical reasons. So if we have no obstetrical medical reason to deliver somebody by a cesarean section, COVID or not, we would still recommend a vaginal delivery. And the same reasons that we used to have pre-COVID to indicate a cesarean section still apply. So there really isn't a benefit specifically to delivering by cesarean section, you know, just delivering during the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, unless there are clear set indications. And that's because there are pros and cons to having a cesarean section. And we definitely, you know, and this is a great thing to talk about right now, because in the UAE, we definitely do see an increased amount of cesarean sections that we do. In fact, about 30 to 40% of all deliveries here in the UAE end up with cesarean sections, which is way higher than the recommended cesarean section rate. And, you know, there are multiple reasons for why people would choose a cesarean section, but they need to understand that, yes, there are pros, but there are cons. And, you know, I can sit here for an hour talking about the risks and benefits of the cesarean section, so I'm not going to do that in interest of time. But I think if you have a certain worry about a vaginal delivery, if you have, you know, certain anxieties about something, if you heard about something and you're worried about a vaginal delivery, the key is to sit down, talk to your doctor, address those issues with your doctor, and have your doctor educate you about what a cesarean section is. Are those worries that you have valid or not? And if they truly are valid, then your doctor will talk to you about what the recommended guidelines are for a cesarean section. If you understand what the disadvantages are, what the risks are, then go for it. But it definitely does require education in advance and for the patient to know what she's getting herself into. So to summarize, COVID pandemic does not necessarily mandate you to deliver by cesarean section if there are no clear medical indications for doing such a thing.
Dr. Dima, you are so smart and so lovely that I'm almost tempted to have a third child. Almost.
No. You are welcome to come anytime, Helen. I am here and ready for you right now.
Not happening. Thank you so, so much. But for anyone
who is
pregnant or looking to conceive, you can find Dr. Dima at Genesis Clinic. Really appreciate your help this afternoon.
Thank you.
For all
Thank
of
you
your
for
insights. Wishing you a wonderful week and happy Mother's Day to you. I hope those four children of yours are there making cards and hopefully some breakfast in bed if they haven't done it already. Have a good one.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Thank you again to Dr. Dima Salem, specialist in obstetrics and gynaecology at Genesis Clinic. You can, of course, tune in to us live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Sunday to Thursday between 2 and 5. On Sundays, it is all about children's health, about parenting, about education, and it's healthy habits on a Tuesday, your chance to get the answers that you need.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.